Don't have enough time to sit down and read all the best Bitcoin articles? Well, let us read them for you. This is a Cryptoconomy Quick Read. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. This is the Cryptoconomy Podcast with Guy Swan. We are the Audible for Bitcoin articles here. And we are finally starting into a really awesome read that I have been waiting to get to for quite some time. This is How Many Wrongs Make a Right? And that's right as in Craig Wright, because puns win. And this is a collection of years of information and evidence against Craig Wright's ridiculous claim that he is Satoshi Nakamoto. And this was all compiled by Jameson Lopp over the years, and he wrote an op-ed piece for Bitcoin Magazine. So I just want to say a huge thank you to the guys at Bitcoin Magazine for letting me read this, and obviously for Lopp's amazing work in putting this together. I'm sure anybody who's been in this Bitcoin space for a good solid 10 minutes has heard of Bitcoin Magazine and Jameson Lopp, but you should definitely be following them both on Twitter, and you've got to be reading Bitcoin Magazine. And it looks like we're going to get to cover a lot more stuff from Bitcoin Magazine in the future, and I'm really, really excited about that. These guys are the rolling stone of the Bitcoin world, and they are back in print. I still haven't gotten all the way through it. I'm about halfway through, but I'm reading the 10th anniversary edition of their magazine that they just released with the Bitcoin 2019 conference. I'm reading it cover to cover right now, and it's wonderful. I'm so happy to see them back in print because that's such a neat novelty thing in the Bitcoin space, and I was a huge fan of the magazine when it first hit. But this article, again, How Many Wrongs Make a Right, it's really long. It's not too terribly long, but it is a longer piece when we're talking about like a Bitcoin Magazine article. So this will take probably two episodes to get through. But I know a lot of people specifically didn't get to read it in full because it was so long. So I thought this would be a perfect candidate for the show and an audio version of. And then all the mess with the Kleinman case is currently in the spotlight. And so Craig is being talked about again and again, failing to provide anything as far as real evidence. Just his normal giant pile of rhetoric and nonsensical stories to the court. So it's funny, there's this huge part of me that just thinks we should just ignore this whole thing and let him fall into obscurity. But, you know, he's scamming people out of money, and some just utter fools are still hanging on to every tiny thread of possibility that maybe he actually is Satoshi, probably because they're in love with their investment and they can't handle the fact that that's not working out. And to be perfectly honest, it is really entertaining. So let's hit every piece of evidence over the years that basically show how empty his story is that Craig Wright is Satoshi Nakamoto. And I'm going to add some links to this episode. Obviously, a link to the article. He's got a large number of visuals, some linked videos, a bunch of tweets and images. So I encourage you to go check those out actually at BitcoinMagazine.com at the article. And in addition, there's a great episode with Lopp on the Bitcoin Magazine podcast where he's talking all about how he collected the data and why he decided to publish and his perspective on the whole thing. It's a really good episode. It's about 40 minutes. I just listened to it yesterday. So if you haven't heard it yet, it makes a great follow-up after listening to this article. So don't forget to go to the show notes, and I'll also have that in the Twitter post to get all those goodies. But for now, let's go ahead and start into today's article, part one of Jameson Lopp's How Many Wrongs Make a Right. In other articles and on social media, some people have called into question Craig Wright's character on a personal level and tried to establish patterns of fraudulent business practices not specifically related to the matter at hand. While my research led me to examine these allegations, I decided to narrow the focus of this particular article on evidence solely as it relates to Wright's claims that he is Satoshi Nakamoto, the creator of Bitcoin. Craig S. Wright burst upon the Bitcoin scene in 2015 as a mysterious and controversial figure who claimed to be Satoshi Nakamoto, the pseudonymous creator of Bitcoin. I actually crossed paths with him on Twitter several times in 2014 when he used the now deleted handle Dr. Craig Wright, but I found most of his tweets difficult to follow and I generally dismissed him. But not everybody did. And here he's got the embed for the video of Gavin Andreessen after announcing that he was convinced that Craig Wright was Satoshi Nakamoto. In 2017, I met Craig Wright in person at the Future of Bitcoin conference in Arnhem, Netherlands. He was much more personable when not standing on a stage with cameras pointed at him, though he still seemed pretty stubborn and tended to speak in ways that I found more confusing than enlightening. Tweet by Jameson Lopp. After extensive field research, I'm still sure it doesn't matter if Craig's connected to Satoshi. His words must stand upon their own merit. End tweet. Over the years, I had assumed that Wright would discredit himself to the point that we no longer had to hear about him, but he has persisted. Most recently, he has taken to legally threatening people who publicly proclaim that Wright is not Satoshi. But I posit that Satoshi Nakamoto no longer has any power over Bitcoin. The question of Satoshi's true identity is but an irrelevant curiosity. I believe the relevant question is whether or not Wright is credible. After considering the evidence presented in this post, you can make a better informed decision. The following represents much of the relevant information about Wright's history with Bitcoin and its community that I could find, compiled into a format that will hopefully make for an easy reference. Satoshi evidence and lack thereof. Is it possible that Wright is somehow connected to Satoshi and the creation of Bitcoin? Well, it's not a connection that's as yet possible to disprove, and Wright appears to be counting on that. His latest response to questions about a lack of evidence for this connection is that he won't bend to pressure to disclose his financial records, and that key ownership does not prove anything. Supposedly, his work should be sufficient proof. What we know and can prove is that, point, he has a documented history of questionable statements and activities. Point, he has a history of appearing to exaggerate his academic credentials. He has made a multitude of technical errors in his writings that call his understanding of Bitcoin and internet technology into question. His writing style, according to text analysis, and demeanor do not appear to be the same as those of the Satoshi whose writings are archived here. Link. Wright once said, quote, "I am a lawyer, and this, financial law, is my area of specialty." Whereas the real Satoshi, when asked about how a financial law applied to Bitcoin, said, quote, "I'm not a lawyer, and I can't possibly answer that." Wright once said, quote, "At no point have I said Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency." And yet, Satoshi called Bitcoin a cryptocurrency on several occasions. Wright once said that he is a, quote, "academic coder who has no idea about real-world coding." But Satoshi has said, "I'm better with code than with words, though." In 2008, just 6 months before the anonymous Satoshi Nakamoto appeared, Wright made a public post stating, quote, "Anonymity is the shield of cowards. It is the cover used to defend their lies. My life is open, and I have little care for my privacy." End quote. In February 2011, he seemed unaware of Bitcoin at all, as he was thinking about starting a gold-backed payment system. In August 2011, he began to mention Bitcoin in his writings, but he called it bit space coin, whereas Satoshi didn't use a space or the capital C in emails or forum posts. There was one instance of Bitcoin with a capital C in the early codebase, but Satoshi himself later corrected the capitalization. He actively bought and traded coins on Mt. Gox in 2013 and 14. He once asked why you would use X's rather than zeros in a burn address. Satoshi Nakamoto invented the Base 58 encoding scheme used for these addresses, which intentionally excludes numbers and letters that look similar, such as 0 and the letter O. He once claimed that Bitcoin's block size was set in the block header. It's not. He once claimed that Satoshi chose the SEC P256K1 curve due to bilinear pairing properties, but Satoshi once said that, quote, "I didn't find anything to recommend a curve type, so I just picked one," end quote. In an interview with GQ, Wright claimed, quote, "I haven't moved any bitcoins. I have sent them to Hal Finney and Zuko, and that was it, full stop," end quote. But in 2009, Satoshi Nakamoto sent 82.51 bitcoin to developer Mike Hearn. He has thus far failed to provide simple cryptographic proof that he controls keys belonging to Satoshi after promising to do so. The cryptographic, quote, proof he did provide has been widely debunked by numerous experts, including Patrick McKenzie, Dan Kaminsky, and Robert Graham. All right, I want to interject really quick right here that this entire list of bullet points is just riddled with links to all of this stuff. So if you want to do a deep dive, you got to go to the Bitcoin Magazine article and actually check all this stuff out. It's all there, and this is an amazing collection of stuff. All right, let's jump back in. Some of Wright's supporters have claimed that all of the above are part of an elaborate ruse to throw us off the trail, and that he was coerced into announcing his identity as Satoshi. What we can see from historical mailing list posts is that Wright was involved in the cypherpunk and InfoSec communities. As such, Wright is better positioned than most people to pose as a Satoshi candidate. But even as a member of these communities, he did not gain much of a positive reputation. Jameson Lopp's tweet with an excerpt from the mailing list. From Julian Assange. Date, Wednesday, September 18th, 1996. Quoting Craig Wright, "And what am I paying for to protect the status quo? I believe that there is more than enough help for people available. They just need to get off their butts and work." Julian's response, "Do we really need your amateur political views?" Jameson, "Cypherpunk Throwback Thursday to 1996. Julian Assange tells Craig Wright to shut up." End tweet. I am Satoshi. Failed claims. Near the end of his coming out as Satoshi, Wright told BBC News that, "I will come on camera once and I will never ever be on camera again on any TV station or any media ever." End quote. As you will see from the following documented evidence, Wright did not uphold this promise. Rather, he has remained in the spotlight, often insinuating that he created Bitcoin while avoiding or failing to actually prove it. Failure to establish key ownership. On May 3rd, 2016, Wright promised to spend some of Satoshi's coins. He also published this now-deleted post on his blog, link, where he promised to show extraordinary proof that he was Satoshi. In The Satoshi Affair, featured here in the London Review of Books, writer Andrew O'Hagan describes the following events of May 4th, 2016. A, quote, "new and final proof session was intended to blow away the doubts," end quote, when Wright was supposed to send a Bitcoin transaction to Andreessen and a BBC journalist. Quote, "Wright was worried about a security flaw in the early blockchain that would make it risky for him to move Bitcoin, exposing him to exploitation or theft. My sources later said Andreessen understood the problem and confirmed it had been fixed, but Wright continued to worry and showed great reluctance about offering the final proof. Then he left the room abruptly and didn't come back. End quote. After this first failed attempt at cryptographically proving he had Satoshi's keys, he apologized and made it seem as if he was finished. Quote,
I'm sorry. I believed I could do this. I believed I could put the years of anonymity and hiding behind me. But as the events of this week unfolded and I prepared to publish the proof of access to the earliest keys, I broke. I do not have the courage. I cannot.
When the rumors began, my qualifications and character were attacked. When those allegations were proven false, new allegations have already begun. I know now that I am not strong enough for this. I know that this weakness will cause great damage to those that have supported me, and particularly to John Matonis and Gavin Andreessen. I can only hope that their honor and credibility is not irreparably tainted by my actions. They were not deceived, but I know that the world will never believe that now. I can only say, I'm sorry, and goodbye.
End quote. Unconvincing cryptographic signatures. In 2016, Wright wrote a lengthy blog post about how to verify cryptographic signatures, in which he pasted a signature without specifying the message that it verified. It didn't take long before experts determined that the signature in question was one from this Bitcoin transaction, Link, rather than from one that signed some text of Jean-Paul Sartre. GitHub contributor Patrick McKenzie summarized the post well. Quote, Wright's post is flim-flam and hokum, which stands up to a few minutes of cursory scrutiny and demonstrates a competent sysadmin's level of familiarity with cryptographic tools, but ultimately demonstrates no non-public information about Satoshi. End quote. Security researcher and blogger Dan Kaminsky explained why he believes the signature provided by Wright may be fraudulent. Quote, Wright is pretending he is Satoshi's signature on Sartre's writing. That would mean he has the private key and is likely to be Satoshi. What he actually has is Satoshi's signature on parts of the public blockchain, which of course means he doesn't need the private key and he doesn't need to be Satoshi. He just needs to make you think Satoshi signed something else besides the blockchain, like Sartre. He doesn't publish Sartre. He publishes 14% of one document. He then shows you a hash that's supposed to summarize the entire document. This is a lie. It's a hash extracted from the blockchain itself. End quote. In a Motherboard article titled, Craig Wright's New Evidence That He Is Satoshi Nakamoto Is Useless, writers Jordan Pearson and Lorenzo Franceschi Bicarai agreed, saying that, quote, Wright simply reused an old signature from a Bitcoin transaction performed in 2009 by Satoshi, end quote. Altered evidence? It looks as if sometime between 2014 and 2015, Wright could have gone back and altered an old 2008 blog post to make it appear he had been working on cryptocurrency in 2008. And here he has a snapshot of the post from June 2nd, 2014, and then from October 3rd, 2015. The date of the post is Tuesday, the 26th of August, 2008, and the original says, Tomorrow, back to the DNS paper, my statistics dissertation and work. However, the same post from 2015 in October now reads, Tomorrow, back to the DNS paper, my statistics dissertation and work. I have a cryptocurrency paper out soon. 20 years. Triple entry bookkeeping. BDO was good for something. One of the pieces of evidence referenced by Wired and Gizmodo in their, quote, outing of Wright as Satoshi was Satoshi's PGP key. But that ended up being debunked, as it was shown that the keys were backdated. Link. Furthermore, a sleuth on Reddit claimed that according to registration information, a domain shown in one of Wright's supposed emails to Kleiman, a key piece of evidence, quote, that Wright is Satoshi, was not purchased by Wright until January 23rd of 2009, 10 months after the date on the email. These emails were sent to Gizmodo, which speculated that the leaker may very well have been Wright himself. More debunked cryptographic signatures. On November 3rd, 2018, someone asked a question on Stack Exchange about calculating the signature for the transaction in which Satoshi sent Bitcoin to Hal Finney in Block 170. Less than 2 weeks later, Bitcoin Cash underwent a contentious fork between the ABC and Satoshi Vision clients, the latter of which was backed by Wright and Enchain. Within 24 hours of the fork, the Twitter @Satoshi account, which had been posting Satoshi quotes and white paper excerpts for a number of months, started posting uncharacteristic tweets that sounded a lot like they came from Wright. One of these tweets, later deleted, was the calculation of a signature, but Bitcoin devs quickly explained why it was fraudulent. As Bitcoin developer Peter Wella noted, quote, ECDSA signatures where the message isn't a hash and chosen by the signer are insecure, end quote. This time, the signer just published, quote, hash RS tuples. The hash part of ECDSA is integral to the algorithm. If the verifier doesn't run the hash themselves, the security properties don't hold. Jimmy Song has written a detailed article explaining how easy it would have been for anyone, including Wright, to create worthless but believable signatures. In fact, a tool has been released that makes it easy for anyone to create signatures in exactly this fashion. All right, let's take a quick break and hit our sponsor, and we'll come right back in the section, The Altered Blacknet versus Bitcoin White Papers. The Altered Blacknet versus Bitcoin White Papers. In February 2019, Wright tweeted a claim that he had submitted a research paper in 2001 to the Australian government that had the exact same abstract as the Bitcoin White Paper. However, there already was a white paper draft that had been disseminated prior to being publicly posted on the Cypherpunk's mailing list. This presumably backdated white paper looks like the final version rather than the draft, in that it includes all of the contributed corrections that would not have been made until 7 years after the Blacknet paper of 2001. And then we've got a snapshot of the original Bitcoin white paper draft by Satoshi Nakamoto, and then the official white paper from Satoshi Nakamoto and the changes that have happened, and then an image of the abstract from the project Blacknet showing that the corrections were in line with the second version of the white paper, the one officially released. The case of Kleiman's questionable bitcoins. Though not directly linked to evidence of Wright's claims that he is Satoshi, scrutiny of Wright's interactions with computer forensics expert Dave Kleiman, who has also been rumored to be the real-life programmer behind Satoshi, offers some insight into his overall credibility and relationship with the truth. In 2018, relatives of Kleiman filed a lawsuit against Wright in U.S. federal court in Miami, represented by a prominent law firm. The lawsuit purports that Wright fraudulently acquired large numbers of Bitcoin owned by Kleiman by forging various documents. However, there is evidence that the very existence of those bitcoins is highly questionable. In a live WizSec blog post dated February 27, 2018, Kim Nielsen demonstrated that many of these addresses can be accounted for and attributed to other people. One such address, 16COU, etc., that the author identified only as a MTGOX user, likely belongs to Roger Ver, and was used on Roger's Bitcoinocracy site to vote in favor of various statements. In fact, the original version of the WizSec blog post attributed it to Ver before being changed to just say, an MTGOX user. Ver has been questioned about this address, but as far as I can tell, he has never denied that it belongs to him. Updated, May 21st, 2019. On May 4th, 2019, the owner of this address published a signed message attesting that these bitcoins were owned by neither Satoshi nor write. Write versus Satoshi sleep activity schedules. From examining the public timestamps on over 100 blog posts by Wright during the 2009 and 2010 time period, and comparing them against over 800 public timestamps from emails, forum posts, and co-commits by Satoshi during the same period, we can gain some insight as to the sleep patterns of each. It's pretty clear that Wright was generally inactive from 1300 to 1800 UTC, while Satoshi was inactive from 700 to 1200 UTC. As such, Wright appears to maintain a sleep schedule consistent with someone living in the Australian Eastern Standard Time Zone, Australia, while Satoshi maintains a sleep schedule consistent with the Eastern Standard Time Zone of North American East Coast and part of the South American West Coast. While it's possible that Wright was meticulously maintaining two separate schedules for each identity, Occam's razor suggests that the reason for the different patterns is probably because they belong to different people. The raw data and calculations for these charts are made available here. Technical errors and shortcomings. Whoever really was acting as Satoshi Nakamoto introduced one of the most elegant projects to date in the internet era. The creation of Bitcoin was well ahead of its time, and the real Satoshi had a clear grasp of the technical concepts it introduced, as well as a willingness to admit the gaps in his or her knowledge. By outlining some of the more notable examples where Wright has demonstrated a lack of technical knowledge, a recurring characteristic that the pseudonymous Satoshi did not readily demonstrate becomes apparent. Wright is the, quote, chief scientist at Enchain, and yet he often makes questionable technical claims. Tweet by Craig Wright. As a teaser, in Korea, I will discuss how a system can be created to ensure zero confirmation verified transactions can occur on BCH today in under 20 milliseconds. No protocol changes needed. Greater than 99.998% in those 20 milliseconds. Response from Peter Risen. How do you send the signals faster than the speed of light? It takes light 130 milliseconds to circle the Earth. How can we have 99.998% certainty in only 20 milliseconds when it would be impossible for a node in New York to send and receive a message back from a node in London? End tweet. In addition to the tweet above, Wright has claimed the internet bandwidth would exceed local bus speeds, which is impossible, given that the data on both ends of an internet connection between two computers are stored on hard drives. Tweet by Craig Wright. In a decade, it will be 4 to 5 times faster to download a file from the cloud than your local hard drive. Right now, my fiber peaks at 10 gigabytes, the RAID at 2 gigabytes per second. Hard drives, 400 megabit per second. And network exceeds Moore's law. End tweet. He also once claimed that a user with a 56K modem could download 32 megabytes in 9.5 minutes. It would actually take 80 minutes, which suggests that Wright made the mistake of confusing bits per second with bytes per second. Tweet by Craig Wright. If a pool cannot mine a minor 32-megabyte block that a 56K modem could handle and tries to hobble scaling to subsidize their failure, they deserve to be bankrupt. This is capitalism. Scaling is happening in BCH. Miners will just move pools. Life goes on. End quote. He also made a very odd claim regarding DNA. Tweet by Craig Wright. Right now, one human brain or even a DNA strand can store the entire internet. End quote. Time for a science and math lesson. A strand of human DNA is comprised of approximately 200 billion atoms. DNA is made up of only 5 elements: carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, and phosphorus. As such, if we could build a quinary storage system, then one DNA strand could store up to 1 trillion bits, or 125 gigabytes of data. Current estimates put the entire internet at 5 to 10 zettabytes. So this claim is off by at least 10 orders of magnitude. Wright also once claimed that signed integers are less useful than unsigned integers, and that is why more complex logic can't happen on Bitcoin. Supposedly, this is because the ability to overflow an unsigned integer, quote, enables mathematical functions, end quote. Meanwhile, most computer scientists will tell you that integer overflow results in data loss and unintended application behavior. It should be avoided for the reliability and security of the application. Wright also claimed that SECP256K1 could be used for bilinear pairing. This claim was refuted both by Andrew Polstra, a cryptographer at Blockstream, and Vitalik Buterin, creator of Ethereum. Tweet by Craig Wright. If you are promised proof of burn in tokens, you should know this is a fallacy. Later this month, I will demonstrate how any such system can be used to take the burnt token and spend it, even with a proven invalid address. Sorry, Omni et al. End quote. He didn't demonstrate any such thing. Rather, he claimed that Bitmain might have the private key to the burn address. Of course, this is an impossible claim and the math is irrefutable. It would take on the order of 2 to the 160 calculations to brute force the private key, and there isn't enough computing power in the world to do that in any reasonable time frame. Many of Wright's published works have been subjected to harsh scrutiny. Peter R. Risen analyzed a paper Wright wrote about selfish mining and determined that it contained plenty of errors and unclear assumptions. Quote, the author tries to explain some very basic aspects of Bitcoin mining, yet fails due to careless notation, multiple errors in his equations, and a fundamental misunderstanding of what it means for Bitcoin mining to be memoryless. End quote. Similarly, Paul Stork reviewed a paper Wright wrote about segregated witness functionality titled The Illusion of Scale in Segregated Witness, and found it to be riddled with mistakes and nonsensical claims. Quote, the biggest problem is the equation of exchange, PY equals MV, which Craig Wright interprets backward. He initially uses P correctly as price level, i.e. Bitcoin per stuff, but then he switches it for the price of money, which would be stuff per Bitcoin. So it's backwards. In other words, everything about velocity is the opposite of what he says. End quote. The million Bitcoin question. Why bother? All right, guys, we are going to stop here. We're just under halfway through this thing. So much good stuff so far. But this next section is particularly long, and I don't want to stop right in the middle of a thought. This next section will be all about, essentially, why would Craig be doing this? What could he be getting out of it? What are the companies involved? What's the history of all of this stuff? There's a bunch of really good stuff in this section, so I want to hit it all at once, and we will come back to that in tomorrow's episode with part two, and we will try to finish this thing out in full to get a little time for some commentary in at the end. Which I'm going to just hold off until tomorrow. Do not forget to check out, obviously follow Jameson Lopp, follow Bitcoin Magazine. I will have links to their stuff in the Twitter post as well as the show notes. And then don't forget that you can go and listen to the Bitcoin Magazine podcast episode. I will link to that as well, where they're interviewing Lopp about writing this article and kind of the things that went into it. And then, of course, you can also get your copy of the 10th anniversary edition just back in print of the Bitcoin Magazine, the actual Bitcoin Magazine, which you can find on their store, and I will link to that as well. So don't forget to check all that stuff out. Thank you guys for listening. We are closing this episode. Don't forget to subscribe and share this out with everybody you know in the Bitcoin and crypto economy space, particularly those people who are unsure about whether Craig Wright is Satoshi or not. This should help to give them a real perspective on the whole fiasco. But with the Crypto Economy podcast, don't forget I am at the Crypto Economy on Twitter so that you can follow me up there. But there's so much to learn and there's so much excellent content already out there in the Bitcoin space. It's just all written down. So I'm here trying to make it available in audio and to help you make sense of it. We're building a new economy. We're trying to ensure sovereignty and the right to privacy for everyone. And if you want to understand all about the philosophy, the cypherpunks, the economics, and the technologies that brought us to this point and are continuing to move us forward in that journey, well, then you're at the right place. The Crypto Economy Podcast. I am Guy Swan, and that's why I'm doing this. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with another episode. And until then, take it easy, guys.